Well, good afternoon. Pat Moore, your host for Juneau Afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau. Today on the show, we're going to talk with an author of children's books, Sneed Collard, who's coming to Juneau. We'll also hear from members of SEAS about a sailing talk that'll be heard Thursday night. Dixie Hood will come in to share about her writing group, Write for Your Life, and we'll hear some samples of some of the writing. And members of the Juneau School District will join us here to tell us about the play that's coming at JDHS. Weather, snow mixed with rain in the afternoon. Snow accumulation up to an inch. Highs around 37, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. And tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of rain and snow. Lows around 30, light winds. Wednesday, chance of rain in the morning and rain in the afternoon. Snow level about 1,300 feet in the afternoon.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled to allow a ski resort in Arizona to use treated sewage to make snow on the San Francisco Peaks, a site held sacred to tribes. Christina Onnestead reports.
A three-judge panel ruled against a lawsuit by environmentalists alleging the U.S. Forest Service failed to adequately assess the environmental and health impacts of using treated sewer water to make snow. Treated sewage often contains pharmaceutical byproducts that are known to have adverse impacts on amphibians. The judges threw out the case, saying another lawsuit on the same grounds had already been decided. Plaintiff's attorney, Howard Shanker, says it's an outrageous, biased ruling.
These plaintiffs are American citizens who are entitled to have their day in court. They have no privity with any prior plaintiffs.
The court said the suit was a deliberate attempt to delay the ski resort's plans. Shanker says the previous suit upheld the environmental challenges, but was thrown out on a technicality.
So, you know, why shouldn't this issue be resolved on the merits? It makes no sense.
Shanker says his clients can appeal the decision, but it's unlikely they will see victory. Christina Onnestead, National Native News.
A new food truck is making its way around Seattle streets. Called Off the Res, the menu includes fry bread and Indian tacos. Eilish O'Neill has more.
One day, Cecilia Rickards and her longtime boyfriend, Mark McConnell, were looking for some fry bread.
We just wanted to eat some, and nowhere had it at all.
Rickards and McConnell decided to do something about this hole in Seattle's restaurant scene. They built their own food truck. McConnell quit his job, and he enlisted his friend Donovan McGinnis, who's a chef, to help out. McGinnis and McConnell have been best friends since sixth grade.
He introduced me to powwows. I'm a Seattle-born native, and so basically I fell in love with fry bread the first time we tried it. And no one has fry bread, and so this is our take on powwow grove.
That's the sound of the hot oil that McGinnis is dropping dough into. The line of people waiting for food is already long, even though the truck's been here for less than half an hour. Some of the customers, like Rianne Davis, came on purpose to try the tacos.
It's fry bread, so it's like a white bread dough that's fried in oil, and it gets puffy, and it's all crispy on the outside and gooey on the inside. And then it's like, we would call chili, either with meat or without. Usually it's like bean chili. And then taco fixins on the top, so cheese and lettuce.
Davis grew up on the Flathead Reservation in Montana, so Indian tacos are the comfort food of her childhood. But not everyone waiting at the truck originally planned to stop by. People coming out of Pike Street's clubs and bars were drawn to the striking blue paint on the truck's side. Co-owner Cecilia Rickards says she commissioned a Seattle muralist to paint it.
On one side here, we have the Seattle cityscape, and we also have an Indian. He's smoking a peace pipe. And the cloud goes from his peace pipe goes all the way around our ventilation system. And then the cityscape goes across behind the side.
The off-the-res truck will be on Capitol Hill for late nights and in other Seattle neighborhoods at lunchtime. For National Native News, I'm Eilish O'Neill in Seattle, Washington.
Alaska Native elders, scientists, and interfaith leaders are addressing climate change. The One People, One Earth panel is scheduled for Saturday in Juneau. Panelists will discuss environmental stewardship. On this day in 1894, Joseph Nicola died. The Penobscot man's book, The Life and Traditions of the Red Man, was considered to be a literary masterpiece. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after 3, and you're in tune with KTOO FM News. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guest would be here in the studio, I would imagine, if he could, but unfortunately he can't because he's in Missoula, Montana. My first guest is coming to Juneau, however, and is going to be giving a program at the Douglas Library on February 20th at 6:30. Sneed Collard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I didn't get a chance really to talk with you because of the way the phones hooked together, but I am quite an admirer of the scientific research that you've turned into children's books.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It comes from my own love of science, of course.
I think you started out attempting to be a biologist, right?
I did. I studied marine biology at UC Berkeley and realized my attention span was probably too short to continue in that field.
We normally say that you came to your senses at a certain age.
yes. Thank you for giving me that idea.
Anyway, so I think that the thing that is going to be the feature of your talk here is the fact that you've been down 3,000 feet in a submersible. Is that correct?
I'll be talking about that at least once during my visit, especially at the library there. I'm speaking to some schools the next day. But, yes, that was not only a highlight of my writing career, but also my personal experiences as well.
Not all of us get a chance to go down 3,000 feet. How'd that come about?
Well, it came about because I was writing a book about bioluminescence, these animals that make their own light all over the world, but especially in the ocean. And I happened to know a scientist who did research by going down in these submersibles. And I called her up and I said, hey, can I go down in one of these with you? And she said, well, do you have $25,000? Because that's how much it costs to rent one of these things for a day. And of course, I didn't have that kind of money. And I thought, nah, that's okay. Well, about a few weeks later, I got a call from the same scientist, and she said, you won't believe this, but I just got 3 extra days of submersible time I don't know what to do with. How would you like to come out and go diving with me? And of course, I just said, you know, just tell me when and where, and I will be there. So we went out of this place called the Harbor Branch Marine Institute down in Fort Pierce, Florida, Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institute, and we spent 3 days diving in this submersible called the Johnson Sea Link off the coast of the Bahamas there.
Now, can you describe the submersible a little bit for us? I think it's quite small, right?
It's like being in a big van or something like that. It's got 2 compartments. It's got a front plexiglass sphere, which holds 2 people, and then a rear steel diving chamber that holds 2 more people, just with a few little portholes on it.
So now are you sitting or standing or lying down?
Kind of hunched over or lying down or lying back a little bit. It's not even tall enough in the back to sit up on your bottom fully, but there are lots of pads in there, so you kind of recline or hunch over and stare out this porthole as you go diving.
And how big's the porthole?
Porthole is about the size of a dinner plate. But you've also got a video feed from the front. The submersible has cameras mounted on the front. And so you also have a computer screen in there. You can see what they're seeing out in the front. But oddly enough, they say that you see more animals in the back than you do in the front. And that was my case. I got to dive once in each chamber and saw quite a bit more from the rear end of the submersible, so to speak.
Do you have an idea of why that is?
I think probably because there are more lights on the front of the submersible and the animals are kind of shy from that.
Spooks them.
Yeah, they're not used to seeing a big, bright, blaring lights like that. They're just used to seeing little flashes of other animals as they light up.
Now, in another interview that I heard that you had done, you talked about the snow.
Yeah, the marine snow.
Yeah.
Basically, that's the basis of life for the deep sea, and the what they call marine snow is just this rain of mucus or usually covered with bacteria or dead skin or dead little animals that just rains down on the ocean bottom. And it's basically what drives the whole ecosystem down there, with the exception of a few deep sea vents that I'm sure you've heard about that do something called chemosynthesis instead of photosynthesis. But everywhere else, the whole ecosystem is driven just by this rain of dead stuff coated with bacteria coming down on the deep sea floor.
So that's the gourmet restaurant fare of the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine eating snot all your life, and that's probably a pretty good approximation of what it's like.
I can tell right now this is going to be a wonderfully entertaining program for kids. Who are you aiming at with the talk at Douglas? Who would you like to see come?
Well, I'd like to see everybody. The one thing about that talk is that it fascinates everyone from preschool on up to adult. And that's one of the big reasons we chose that one, because it's good for anybody who wants to show up. The amazing thing about going down in the submersible is that, to me, it's like going up in the space shuttle, but better, because there's living things down there. And it truly was a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me.
Now, I've read that we probably know more about the surface of the moon than we do the bottom of the ocean, because there's so little, there's so much area, so much space in the oceans that we've never gone to or never really looked at.
I think that's a fair assessment. The scientist I worked with on this project, every time she goes down in the submersible, she sees two or three species that she's never seen before and which probably have never been described by scientists. And, of course, the tragedy is that we're doing a ton of damage to the deep sea without knowing anything about it. One thing I saw in addition to all the wonderful animals down there was just a rain of beer cans and soda bottles and other garbage that had just been dumped into the ocean by countless ships passing overhead. And so it's, you know, I appreciate what NASA's doing. I'd love to see the same kind of effort going into exploring the largest living space on the planet, which is the deep sea.
There's a big drive here in Juneau against, or there was a big drive, almost made an election issue about plastic bags. And there was the attempt was to have a charge levied for the use of plastic shopping bags so that people would have to pay a tax to use them. Did you see bags?
Tons of bags. Yeah. Bags everywhere. And of course, these things, even the biodegradable ones, take years to break down oftentimes. And I hope that kind of bill passes up there. I know several countries have either banned plastic bags or talked about it just because they don't have the resources to clean them up, and they are a huge health hazard.
I'm thinking the issue didn't make the ballot or something like that, and it's sort of faded off into the general coverage of the election and all that sort of stuff, but it's certainly a live issue for us. We are a seacoast community here, and
right.
We have a landfill that, because we are a very small area. We're the biggest capital in the United States in land area terms, because there's so much of it is inside the city limits of Juneau. But the landfill is very near the ocean here, and so there's no leakage that I know of, but there's the potential of blowing bags and that sort of thing. So
sure.
Now, you started out with a degree in biology, and then you moved gradually into what you've found to be your vocation.
Mm-hmm.
But you still are – I hear this statement that you made about trying to protect the oceans and that sort of thing. I think there's a mission behind the things that you choose to write.
There definitely is. I tend to choose to write about things that most people don't know about. What you'll probably notice in my books, I've focused a lot on tropical ecosystems, for instance, and that's just because when I started thinking about becoming a writer, I realized that there was very little written about these different places. People knew there were coral reefs and they knew there were rainforests, but the details had just been repeated over and over again, and a lot of them weren't even true anymore. And I think because of my own background in science, I love to do the research by going out and seeing this stuff for myself and actually talking to scientists. And because of my degree, I think that probably helped open the doors so scientists felt comfortable talking to me, whether we were in the cloud forest down in Costa Rica or going down in the submersibles we've been talking about. But definitely always behind my work is the hope that readers are going to care more about the planet we live on and want to protect it more, too. And a lot of this, I think, can be accomplished just by getting people turned on about what an amazing planet we live on. In other instances, though, I'll write about issues like global warming, or one of the big issues that I'll actually be talking to students in Fairbanks about, which is invasive species.
So your tour will bring you to Juneau first and then on up to Anchorage and Fairbanks, is that?
Yeah, Fairbanks and then back down to Sitka and Ketchikan. And so I'm very excited about it. It'll be really my first time I'll get to explore a lot of these places.
So you haven't been to Alaska before?
Just on the typical coastal cruise, which I loved, but just gave me a taste of
haven't been to Alaska before.
There you go.
I can tell you. So it sounds like another wonderful adventure in the life of Snead Collard is about to unfold, and we're really glad that we're going to be able to be part of it.
Well, I'm delighted to be invited. You know, it was really the librarians of Alaska who made this happen. And I'm just so grateful that we all have people like that who care so much about literacy and science and reading. And so it's a real honor for me to be invited, and I'm sure we'll all have a good time.
Well, wonderful, Snead. Snead Collard will be talking about his writing and the bottom of the ocean. Writing at the Bottom of the Sea is the subject of the talk. It's at the Douglas Library, February 20th, 6:30 p.m. Snead, welcome to Alaska. We're looking forward to having you among us.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
It's 20 minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO FM. It's Pat Moore, your host for Juno Afternoon. There will be a special talk as part of an educational series sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Sailors. The talk will be Thursday, February 16th. It's at 6 p.m. It'll be held at Northwind Architects. Their offices are at 126 Seward Street downtown. Dan Rondo of Harkin Yacht Equipment will be there to give a presentation on roller furling head sail systems, followed by a question and answer session. And attendees will have a chance to introduce themselves and see a short video about the crash test boat. There'll be a discussion on maritime safety following the film. SEAS is a nonprofit educational organization, the Southeast Alaska Sailors. It's dedicated to increasing sailing safety and sponsoring local sailing events. If you'd like more information about this event, you can call 209-1094 or you can visit seasailing.us. It's all one word, seasailing.us.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
You are listening to the soft, sweet voice of 14-year-old Allison Grace McCarty. Allison recently released her 7th CD of uplifting spirituals sung in Yupik, English, and Latin. While Allison lives with her immediate family in Anchorage, her mother is from the southwest village of Napakiak. Allison spends time there in the summer, where she sees extended family and many elders. She says her connection to her Alaska Native culture and her Christian faith both inspire her art.
I do it because I love it and to praise God, and maybe I don't hear that much kids my age speaking Yupik, let alone singing, and I just hope to encourage them to learn the language. I just want other kids to learn the language so in a couple generations it'll still be alive.
Allison says she's been both singing and recording since she was just 6 years old. For the album, Allison made a music video for the title track. She says she chose this song for the video and for the album's title for a reason.
Well, this CD is called For Those Tears I Died. That song and music video that I made is actually dedicated to young people my age, maybe a little bit older, that are contemplating suicide. And I just want them to think twice about that.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards, Initiative for Community Engagement.
The Juneau Japan Student Exchange is hosting a wine, beer, sake tasting and a silent auction fundraiser on Saturday, February 18th. It'll be from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Hangar Ballroom. Proceeds will allow middle school students to participate in a cultural exchange program between Juneau and a village in northern Japan. Other Juneau businesses and families are also involved. Tickets are $30. They're available at the door.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 14th of February, 2012. Today is Valentine's Day, a big day for greeting cards and for candy sales, which goes back more than 1,500 years to the Feast of St. Valentine, established in the 5th century. Though nobody's sure exactly which of many St. Valentines it is the feast day of. But the ancient Romans had a fertility festival in mid-February called Lupercalia, when young men ran naked in the streets wearing strips of goatskin, which they gently whipped young women with to improve their fertility. And Lupercalia was still popular long after the Roman Empire was officially Christian, so the church simply came in and renovated it. In the 14th century, Chaucer wrote about St. Valentine's Day as a romantic occasion in his long poem, The Parliament of Fowls. In the early 15th century, the Duke of Orleans, held captive in the Tower of London, wrote a Valentine's Day poem to his wife. Shakespeare mentions the sending of valentines in a speech by Ophelia in Hamlet. It was on this day, 1895, Oscar Wilde's play The Importance of Being Earnest opened in London, wrote it in just 21 days, the first draft at least, fastest he had ever written anything. The story of a man named Jack Worthing, who pretends to have a younger brother named Ernest, who he can use as an excuse for getting out of things, and he even pretends to be Ernest when that suits his purpose. And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 14th of February, 2012. Today's Valentine's Day, a big day for greeting cards and for candy sales, which goes back more than 1,500 years to the Feast of St. Valentine, established in the 5th century. Though nobody is sure exactly which of many St. Valentines it is the feast day of. But the ancient Romans had a fertility festival in mid-February called Lupercalia, when young men ran naked in the streets wearing strips of goatskin, which they gently whipped young women with to improve their fertility. And Lupercalia was still popular long after the Roman Empire was officially Christian, so the church simply came in and renovated it. In the 14th century, Chaucer wrote about St. Valentine's Day as a romantic occasion in his long poem, The Parliament of Fowls. In the early 15th century, the Duke of Orleans, held captive in the Tower of London, wrote a Valentine's Day poem to his wife. Shakespeare mentions the sending of valentines in a speech by Ophelia in Hamlet. It was on this day, 1895, Oscar Wilde's play The Importance of Being Earnest opened in London, wrote it in just 21 days, the first draft at least, fastest he had ever written anything. The story of a man named Jack Worthing, who pretends to have a younger brother named Ernest, who he can use as an excuse for getting out of things, and he even pretends to be Ernest when that suits his purpose. And his friend Algernon also starts impersonating the imaginary Ernest. So two women fall in love with the same fictional person. Oscar Wilde said the play expressed his philosophy that we should treat all the trivial things of life very seriously and all the serious things with studied triviality. Here are two poems for Valentine's Day, two sonnets by William Shakespeare. The one you all know, sonnet number 116. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out, even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. And Shakespeare's sonnet, number 56. Sweet love, renew thy force, be it not said thy edge should blunter be than appetite, which but today by feeding is allayed, tomorrow sharpened in his former might. So love be thou, although today thou fill thy hungry eyes, even till they wink with fullness, tomorrow see again, and do not kill the spirit of love with a perpetual dullness. Let this sad interim like the ocean be which parts the shore, where two contracted new come daily to the banks, that when they see return of love, more blessed may be the view, or call it winter, which being full of care makes summer's welcome, thrice more wished, more rare. Two sonnets by Shakespeare. Sonnet number 116, Let Me Not to the Marriage of True Minds, and sonnet number 56, Sweet Love, Renew Thy Force. That's the Writer's Almanac, sponsored by Constant Contact, celebrating the launch of Social Campaigns, a brand new social media marketing tool. Learn more at constantcontact.com. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Schweitzer. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Juno Empire's Job Fair, working to connect employers and employees March 21st from 2 to 6 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Information at JunoEmpire.com/jobfair.
It's 3:32 and you're in tune with KTOO FM News. Pat Moore, your host for Juno Afternoon, and I have a studio full of poets, authors, writers, wonderful people. Dixie Hood is here with some members of her writing group called Write for Your Life. Talia and Katie have joined her. And in a little bit, I think we get to actually hear a couple of pieces that have been written by these two young ladies. Dixie, tell us a little bit about Write for Your Life.
Well, first of all, happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day you too.
To all of our listeners and to everybody here at the station. And I wanted to say that it was just such a fun surprise that we got invited here, because just a few days before, we were talking at the writing group about the possibility of being on the radio, and I said I'd follow up and give a call to see about Juno Afternoon, and then Cheryl called me before I ever had a chance to call
That's
myself.
Because we bug your meetings, you know.
And she had seen the listing in the arts and culture section of the Juno Empire. And so anyway, that was kind of exciting news to take back to the group. And one of the things that I wanted to say is that we meet every Wednesday from 10 to 11 at the Mendenhall Valley Library. And it's from 10 until 11, and we have actually reserved the room for up until noon, because sometimes we're talking to each other and don't want to be rushed out by another group that's waiting to get in. So we have about an hour to share, and you really aren't coming to a class. We're not. I'm not teaching a class. It's just a way of motivating people who enjoy writing to come and share. And it can be a poem, or it can be a story that they're writing, or it can be a letter, or a personal letter, or a memoir. And if you haven't written something new to share, you can come and encourage other people and listen. And so it's pretty informal.
How many people come?
Well, it varies. Sometimes we only have a couple, sometimes six or seven. Occasionally in the summertime when some of the schools are out and young people come, it can be eight or more even. But it's a fairly small group. And one of the things that got it started was Dixie Belcher, who was working on a book about her taking the her singing chorus to the Soviet Union, and how the connections from that trip made a new alliance between Alaska and the USSR. And so she's been working on a book about that. And Marcia Bennett, who is a participant nowadays, is working on the history of the grocery business in Juneau, and her family was involved in that, and she's doing it for the State Archives. And Rachel Zahn and her kids were bringing writings about hiking in Hawaii and some of the adventures and scary things that happened to them. So Anyway, another person that isn't here today, Barbara Wilmot, really surprised me. This was a year ago or so. And she had written lyrics for some church music and was going to read it as if it was a poem. And I asked her if, because it was a lyric, she could sing it for us, which she did. And that was just a wonderful surprise and a delight. So new things are always happening. And these young ladies wrote some love poems and writings. And so that makes a good fit for today.
Certainly does.
And I'd like to have you share those. They recorded them with Andy.
Okay, the first piece that I have here is a poem that was written by Natalia. Okay, that Natalia. Okay.
Natalia.
Natalia, can we play your piece then?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
My name is Natalia Perez, and I'm here to share a poem of Valentine's Day. My sun, my love, my sky, I could do anything to make you smile. And I will buy you a chocolate heart and make you chocolate cake for my love. And I would take you to the movie night just to make you smile. And I would take you to the end world just for you, my open door love. I would change just for you, teddy bear. And I make the light dark so we can see each other. So the end of the world will notice that we together forever, my moon, we could see the stars together. And put blankets up outside so we can lay down, so we can stare at each other by the moon. And start giving me some hugs. And you could be happy, my love, sunshine.
Wow. You are a poetess. That's wonderful. I love the idea of lying down on blankets with the moonlight on the two of us so we could stare at each other.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful, beautiful thought.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there someone that you wrote that poem to?
Yeah, I wrote this for Ricky Togaban.
Ah.
He's a really good friend from high school, Ricky Togaban.
He's
like
quite a
my
star,
best friend from high school. He's like my brother, too.
Ah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I hope that you share it with him. That's a beautiful,
yeah,
beautiful thought.
Yeah, I sent him on Facebook the poem that I wrote to him.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Talia. That was very, very fine.
You're welcome.
And Dixie, you have another guest with you as well.
Yes. Katie has a poem to share. And I'd like for you to go ahead and hear that now.
Okay. Oh.
Face turning pink.
There.
My name is Natalia Perez.
Nope.
And I'm
Wrong
here
person.
To...
Hi, my name is Katie King, and I wrote a poem about love, walking to the cemetery, laying the roses on my grandma's grave, praying in the wild wind.
Another wonderful example. Yeah, we had trouble hearing it here in the studio, but what a beautiful little thought. Laying roses on your grandma's grave.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I guess Valentine's is about family love as well as...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So... When you were thinking of this poem, when you were writing it,
mm-hmm.
could you see your grandmother?
Yeah, I could.
Uh-huh.
I could picture her when I was writing it.
And could you hear her voice?
No, but I can just see her face.
You can see her face, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the beauty of poetry.
We would do it every year.
Uh-huh. The beauty of poetry is that somehow it allows us to see things that we cannot see any other way. So you've grasped onto something really wonderful here. Dixie, you really, sounds like you run an inspiring, wonderful session here with these with the folks who come in. Your part in this, do you feel like you bring some of this out of the people who come to your group?
Well, you know, I'm a counselor here in Juneau, and one of the things in terms of being a counselor that I think has really always been helpful, and that is if someone is talented or interested in writing or in art or in music and can use that as a means of emotional expression, I really encourage that because I think it just really can be uplifting and healthy and fun. And so I'm really excited about the opportunity to work with people in this group. And what I've been working on myself over time is memoirs. And I was inspired to do that by getting a copy of my aunt's, my dad's sister's memoirs. And it wasn't written like a standard autobiography at all. It was like a series of 1- and 2-page essays about different things like the family dog or vacations or things like that. And I had memories of growing up during World War II that I started writing about, and about my enjoyment of Frank Sinatra, and about my liking to take photos from a very early age. Just a whole bunch of different sort of scattered things that I'm going to put together, hopefully with a photo that'll go along with it, each one of them, in some kind of a printed up memoir for my family. And one of the things that several of us were talking about a week or so ago were when we were discussing poetry was haiku, and I looked it up in the dictionary to see exactly what the definition was, and it said a major form of Japanese verse written in 17 syllables and employing highly evocative allusions and comparisons. And I had an idea in mind to write one, but I kept coming up with too many syllables. And so I'd like to just quickly share what I ended up with.
Is this 17, or are we going to have a couple of extras here?
It's more than a few extras.
Oh, okay.
I had this idea in mind, but it just expanded. Mountains, music, wildlife and writers, seashore, symphony, sometimes snow, boating, biking, theater, running in the rain, always art, chilly weather, warm people, crossing paths every day on our virtual island, Juneau, home is where the heart is.
A wonderful poem, not unfortunately a haiku, but there is a professional haiku writer in Juneau. She writes down at the canvas.
Yes, and these young women have participated, I think.
She produces haiku on demand. I can't think of her name right now. What is?
Do you know her name?
Tasha. And the other new one is, I forgot her name.
Uh-huh.
There's three new ones in the canvas. Which is Tasha, Josefina. All those ones, there's other new, brand new people on the canvas. So I love art. Starting in high school, I was starting to draw and paint and everything else. Yeah.
You were telling us about the the competition or something for buses, the omnibus art or poetry?
Yes.
When's that happening?
Well, I have some poems that I had to share for the bus, but they're in the car right now.
Uh-huh. And these will be on the city buses?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we only have a couple of moments more.
Okay.
Is everyone welcome at your sessions?
Yes, absolutely. It's open-ended. People can show up anytime they want. And my phone number...
If somebody's a little bit bashful, they might want to...
789-2068. Uh-huh. And I'm in the phone book, so I can be called for any information about it, the group. And I really welcome newcomers and anybody that would just like to come and listen and get inspired and then start in on it would be fun.
Well, Dixie Hood's Write for Your Life program. It's at 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock and maybe a little bit longer than that at the Mendenhall Public Library on Wednesdays.
Wednesday morning.
And basically open house. Come on in. If you have any questions, call her at 789-2068, is that
yes.
Right? Okay, 2068. And you'd be welcome to bring a sample of anything that you might have written, but if you haven't written, you might just come by as well.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And love to you all on this special day.
Well, thank you. And thank you, ladies, for the...
Valentine's, everybody.
Yes, and happy Valentine's. And thank you for your two wonderful Valentine poems.
Yeah, thank
welcome.
You.
This is Bird Note. Swans, like the tundra swans calling in the background, have long exalted the human heart. Among the world's most magnificent creatures, swans inspire us today, Valentine's Day. On a lake, an adult pair of swans glide side by side, two young cygnets between them, an image of protective love. They mate for life, their bond enduring from year to year, and the family group remaining together until spring. No wonder swans have worked their way into many human images of love. It was in the guise of a swan that the Greek god Zeus came to Leda, queen of Sparta. One result of their tryst was the lovely Helen, whose affair with Paris of Troy set in motion that most enduring of epics, the Iliad. One of the finest images of a pair of swans comes to us from the poet William Butler Yeats. Unwearied still, lover by lover, they paddle in the cold, companionable streams or climb the air. Their hearts have not grown old. Passion or conquest, wander where they will, attend upon them still. Happy Valentine's Day from Bird Note.
Okay, a little weather update here. Today we're looking for snow mixed with rain this afternoon. Snow accumulation up to 1 inch, highs around 37. Southeast winds 10 miles per hour, and tonight it'll go to mostly cloudy, chance of rain and snow. Lows around 30 degrees, light winds. Wednesday we're looking at chance of rain in the morning, and then it will rain in the afternoon. Snow level about 1,300 feet in the late afternoon, highs around 38, and southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour Wednesday. Wednesday night the rain and snow continues. Lows will go down just a little below freezing at 31, and southeast winds 10 miles per hour on Wednesday night. It's 11 minutes to 4, and you're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon, and with me in the studio is about half the cast, I guess, of Kiss Me Kate, the JDHS production that's beginning to go to the boards here pretty quickly. So could you introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, I'm Michelle Moore, and I'm the director at Juneau Douglas High School and the theater teacher. And I brought three of the cast members today.
And these cast members are?
Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Arinabella, and I play Paul / the Padua priest.
Okay.
I'm Ellen Dyer, and I play Ricky, the stage manager.
And I am Zebediah Bodine, and I play the role of the jester.
Okay. And this is not, these parts that we're talking about here do not sound to me like Shakespeare's names, with the possible exception of the last one. So this play is not either the Shakespeare or straight Cole Porter. This is something else, right?
No, yeah, it's Cole Porter's musical that he put together about a professional theater group that's putting on Taming of the Shrew.
Okay.
And so you get a little bit of Taming of the Shrew and a little bit of what's going on backstage.
And what is going on backstage?
Oh, mayhem. Total mayhem.
Are the three of you involved in the mayhem?
Oh, yes. The jester makes mayhem quite often. And Paul, actually, is the one who starts the ball rolling in the very wrong direction, and I'll say how he does that. Yeah.
How does that happen?
Everything wrong in the play is pretty much my fault. I give the flowers to the wrong person. My
the lead in the play wants to send them to one of the actresses, and Paul instead takes them to his ex-wife, and it really kicks things off in the wrong direction. And so it's really Paul's fault of mistaken identity, which is a big play with Shakespeare, to get the comedy rolling.
So this is basically an overlay of Midsummer Night's Dream with Kiss Me, Kate.
Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah, so the two plays kind of float around together. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And so the jester then is there to just kind of keep the ball rolling. Is that your function in this thing?
More or less. Uh-huh. I mostly just sort of mess around, doing whatever the heck I feel like doing. And apparently that involves mischief. So
We call that controlled chaos.
Yeah.
Is the basic call of that. And the part that you're doing is what in relationship to all of this craziness backstage?
I mostly just kind of yell at people who are shouting at everyone else in a vain attempt to keep the show under some kind of control.
How large is the total cast?
There are 40 actors and actresses in the show, and then, of course, we have an orchestra and a crew beyond that. So probably all together we have about 60, 65 kids involved.
Michelle, are you given a chair and a whip? Or?
Well, actually, there is a whip in the play, but it's not my whip. It's Petruchio's whip.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but how do you keep a cast of 40 and an orchestra and all of this other stuff and a stage crew under some kind of reasonable control?
That takes a talent all its own. I've always been pretty good at that. I have a good rapport with the kids, and I hold them to a high standard of excellence, and it just never seems to be a problem. I seem to be able to weather that really well in every show that I have.
So is that true?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
They're paid. No, it sounds wonderful. So when does it open?
So we've already opened, and our last weekend will be the 24th and 25th of February. This next weekend, we have drama, debate, and forensics team going to our state competition, and I'm the coach for that. So we had to skip a weekend. So the 24th and 25th at 7 p.m. at the JDHS Auditorium. And it is a barrel of laughs. You will go away from the theater feeling good and happy, and it's just a great time.
And we might mention, I think this is also a fundraiser?
Yes. The shows that we're doing, our gate will go toward helping the kids go to Scotland. We won an award for being one of the best theater departments in America. And because of that, we were invited to perform a show at the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to use our gate to send the kids to that, and if we can just fill up our auditorium both nights, will raise a big chunk of the money. It's so amazing how that happens.
The festival's in August 2013?
Yes, sir.
And how many students would be able to go?
We have been approved to take 15 students from the school district. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if we raise enough to take 16, then we can take 16. But our goal is to take 15 kids. And we already pretty much have half of the money that I've already been saving up in my budget for some type of a trip that might come around as doing shows. And so I know that with gate money from our shows that we have coming up next year and the rest of this year, we could possibly raise the money that we need.
Well, good. This is the part of the fundraising effort, the 24th and the 25th, 7 p.m. at JDHS. What's the price?
The price is just $10 for adults and $8 for students and senior citizens. And you can buy tickets at Hearthside Books or at thejack.org, or you can purchase them at the door. Although it is the last weekend, and it's better to get your tickets early. Then so, wait at the door.
But you can actually go on the Jack's website and
you
get
can.
Tickets. Okay, good. So, excellent. The show is titled what?
Kiss Me, Kate.
Out of all of those things that it is, Kiss Me, Kate is the title
yes.
of the piece. Okay, well, wonderful. Well, thank you very much for all coming down. I
thank
appreciate
you for
it.
Having
Happy
us.
Valentine's Day to all of you. And let's go out with a little music here.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage.
On Juno Afternoon, Amanda Compton will be in to host the show, and she has Rich Moniak and some students. They're in Juno as the Muslim student ambassadors coming in. Beth Weigel will be here to let everyone know about Discovery Days in Discovery Southeast, and we'll hear about the week at Eagle Crest, along with Writer's Almanac, music, and more. That'll all be Wednesday at 3 on tomorrow's edition of Juno Afternoon. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas, and KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we're on K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1 MHz. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. Our sister stations KRNN, RN872, and KXLL on 873. And you can also stream us online at www.ktoo.org.